Yes, I true, but it's there are too many people and it's quite small. So there's not really
All
like a
right.
proper area for this.
Well,
So
you can take up your own floor space.
hmm.
That in fact, in India, if you sit quietly with your eyes closed, they'll probably respect that.
Yeah, I believe so.
All right. So look at the way that your mind is making up excuses for making it hard.
Well, because it's
That in fact,
I'm
you can, if you're staying in a hostel, you can walk out of the hostel and walk down the street. Now, I know that Indian streets are quite busy, but that doesn't mean that you can't pay attention to where you're going. To
Well,
keep your mind focused on the path right in front of you and walk mindfully so that you don't step on anything. And in India, there's a lot of stuff to step on. Okay.
But that's the reason
So you
why
have, in fact, you have even better opportunity to practice Anapanasati.
Well, maybe I've been confusing what I'm saying because, like, so for me, there's like the formal practice of sitting and the informal practice of in between sitting. So what
okay,
I've been.
guess what? The Buddha did not make a distinction between formal and informal practice, and he didn't even make a formal practice. What he said was, go to the forest. And many Indian cities like Mumbai are quite a forest. Go to the foot of a tree, sit on the floor, go to an empty hut. So that hostel is not so empty, but you can go find a quiet, empty place. Maybe not a quiet place, but one that's empty. If not, you can just be out on the street. Now, Indian streets are really, really busy places, but you can find a quiet place. In fact, looking for a quiet place, you can look for it mindfully. I think that Western mindset has gotten all messed up when they think that meditation is about a meditation hall and sitting on the floor with a whole lot of other people meditating. And that formal meditation is actually your enemy. Make reality your friend. Wherever you are in reality, you can pay attention to what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're saying. And like I said, riding on the bus is an excellent time to practice because the only option is to be miserable, hoping for the bus journey to end.
Well, that's actually what I've been doing since I left Gokarna, because most of the time I would be moving around. So I would prolong as much as I can my awareness of my body, my mind, my speech, what I'm doing with my hands. And now that I cannot really sit properly in a place like to seclude myself, I say like this, I guess. I'm just trying to keep on practicing, but just being aware, mindful of, you know, along the day. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to call, because I wanted to have advice about how to have a sustainable practice.
Well, what kind of advice did you expect to get by calling? To change location or to change your mind about the location?
Well, maybe not an advice, but your view of this, I guess, of when you cannot sit.
The view is the one that the Buddha gave, and that is that you want to find a quiet place, and if you can't find that, at least you can find seclusion by closing your eyes. Just don't look at all the mess around you. Close your eyes and look at all the mess that you brought with you.
Yeah, that's one thing too, because I sit with open eyes most of the time.
Pardon?
So, When I practice, when I sit, I learn to practice with open eyes, looking down the floor.
All right, so close them then.
But
you don't have to tell me you got attached to your eyes. You open and close them on a regular basis.
It just, for me, the idea of practicing with closed eyes is like the opposite of what the Buddha taught, meaning by like looking at things, you know, as they really are. So because we spend most of our time
looking at things like they really are with that inner eye, not necessarily those eyeballs between your ears.
Yeah, but because we spend most of our life with open eyes, you know, during our conscious time with open eyes, that's why for me, meditating with open eyes sounds obvious.
But we're not necessarily talking about the balls between your ears.
Okay. Good to know.
That in fact, keeping your eyes open while you're practicing looking inside is a distraction often. Having open eyes would be like having the floor in front of you where the floor is not doing very much, that most of the activity is done inside the mind. And so that's what you're going to be looking at.
Yeah.
But as far as walking around in India, watching where you're going, making sure that you don't run into people. Look at all the feet and all the shoes and all the crap and all the candy bar wrappers. And don't step on them. It may be full of candy that you're not willing to carry around on the bottom of your foot. So watch closely where you're walking, but when you're not walking, then start looking on the inside of where you're walking there.
Well, I believe I'm practicing like this, but it's true that sometimes I realize that I stop paying attention. You know, there's some gaps, which I guess is normal.
Why don't you look for a way to cheer up?
Yeah.
I mean, you're in India. That's a miserable place because there's a lot of miserable people in India. What are you looking for?
What I'm looking for in India, you mean?
Yeah. Are you looking for peace of mind? Because you're not going to be around any people generally who have peace of mind.
Yeah, I guess.
But in fact, India is full of ashrams. Have you bothered to go stay at an ashram? Even for a few hours.
One time I ended to Ama Ashram. Have you heard about her, Ama?
There are tens of thousands of ashrams in India. I have not visited them all.
No, but Ama. Do you know this woman, Ama?
Ama. The one with the back brace from Kerala.
So I end up in this ashram by, like, it was quite random. I was looking for a place to sleep on the beach, and I end up staying 3 days in this ashram. And it was the first time.
Why did you leave?
Well, because it wasn't a good place to stay more than 3 days for me. Yeah, it was more like, you know, everyone most of the time were just, Westerner looking for answers. And
Why? You're not looking for answers. You're looking for peace of mind. And you're not even finding that. Don't look for answers.
Not me. I'm not talking about...
I know what you're talking about, but you're not all of those people.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I was among people who were kind of like putting this woman as a god, somehow. And that's not my way of...
Looking for a hero, looking for a guru.
Yeah, exactly. So it was good experience, but 3 days was enough. Because there's no peace of mind. There it's just like a hospital, like for mind.
I know. That's what a ashram is. It's a hospital for the mentally broken.
Yeah. So that's why I don't want to stay there.
Well, all of the rest of India outside of the ashram is just a random group of people who are mentally broken. At least the ones that are in the ashram know they're broken.
Maybe sometimes not, but yeah. Well, I'm actually leaving India in a few days, so I will be in a new big hospital.
All right. So why would you go to a very famous ashram and then judge all ashrams by that? The best thing to do is to go into a small town and find an obscure ashram.
I wasn't looking for an ashram. It just happened.
Okay.
I was just on my way to find a place to sleep, and
so
why don't you
continue to do that? Go look for ashrams outside of the mainstream.
I'm not looking for ashrams.
I know you're not. I'm suggesting that you do.
Yeah, but now I'm leaving India next week, so the.
Okay, you're leaving India. That, what a relief.
I'm glad also. It was a good experience, but at the same time, I need a break from India now.
I've been there, done that. I spent about 3 years altogether in India.
Yeah, okay. Now I'm slowly going back home.
Where is home?
South of France.
Okay. Well, you might find some peace and quiet in the south of France.
Definitely. More than here. But where I was staying in our last call was really like a paradise on that, you know, Gokarna. It's a really small town, and it was quite a holy place for many Indians. So, yeah, I really like this place. It might be the only place in India that I found really quiet and peaceful. But otherwise, most of the time, there's chaos and noise. So,
okay. So, enjoy your travels.
I have one more thing that I wanted to ask you, because the days after we talked, I actually started to practice this inner smile, which came naturally. And inner smile, like when I was sitting at some point, there was some smile inside of me that kind of rise. And sometimes it comes naturally, and sometimes I just try to generate it.
Well, smiles work both ways.
Yeah.
They work both ways. You put on a smile on your face and it begins to sink in. Or if you already have a smile on the inside, it's quite natural for you to put it on your face too.
Yeah.
So the effects works in both directions.
Yeah. And one thing happened is, so there was this loud voice that when I was sitting, just really loudly said, you're lying to yourself. And this voice was really clear and loud. And I just start to laugh at it and smile. And I feel so much joy and happiness because of this inner voice that told me that I was lying to myself. And I knew that was an hindrance.
Well, you do know that when you tell yourself that you're lying to yourself, two possibilities, and in fact, both of them are probably true. One is that you're correct. You have been lying to yourself. And the other one is that that's an unwholesome thought. And so the correct thought would be, yeah, so what? I've been lying to myself, but so what? I was taught to do that. Everybody lies to themselves.
But that's why I'm talking about this inner smile, because that's how I actually got rid of this voice, because it was really loud. I was really like, oh, what's going on here? And this smile, and I just smile on my face arrived, and I felt really great joy because I could just just make this voice like, no, you're not right. I mean, I understand what you say, but at the same time, I realized that was a big hindrance, you know, because this voice saying I'm lying. Well, this voice saying that I was lying to myself, because.
Well, of course it is. Lying to yourself is a hindrance, and telling yourself you're lying to yourself is an even bigger hindrance.
So yeah, that was a really strange experience. Yeah, I wanted to share this because I didn't know.
All right. Well, what are you going to do instead of lying to yourself and telling yourself that you're lying to yourself? What else can you do?
Oh, I could change.
Yeah, you can change.
Yeah.
One of the things you can do, you can say, yeah, but so what? I'm okay.
Yeah.
Because then you're telling yourself the truth, because you actually are already okay. But when you tell yourself you're lying to yourself, that actually is a way of saying that you're not okay.
Mm.
There's something wrong with you. You're lying to yourself.
Mm.
And the answer to that would be, I'm okay.
Yeah.
And then you're telling yourself the truth. Then you can smile. I'm okay.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing, gladdening the mind. Even when I was cycling, because the road was really challenging, one of the most challenging roads that I've been to in India, up and down, ups and downs. And I guess...
Well, why were you looking for a challenge?
I wasn't looking for a challenge. I was going to get
Mumbai.
Well,
you were challenging yourself. Of course you were looking for a challenge. As soon as you recognized that you were challenged, you continued to challenge yourself.
I wasn't looking for a challenge.
I want to climb that hill. You didn't have to climb the hill. You could have sat down and right where you were and you said, wow, what a relief. I don't have to climb that hill. But oh no, you wanted to challenge yourself.
Well,
you got to get to that hill.
Yeah, because that was the way to Mumbai. So I had to climb this hill.
No, you didn't. You could have sat down for a day or two and then started to climb when it wasn't so exhausting.
Yeah. It's true. But time was running.
Well, you were in a hurry as well as wanting a challenge.
Yeah, true. But, you know, like the practice that I've been doing since we met, actually, I realized how it helped me, you know, to go through. Even if I had experiences through my journey from France to Nepal, and I could feel that being mindful even more and gladdening the mind helped me to go through these challenges. Because sometimes I would be like, why am I doing to...
But you're not gladdening the mind so that you can go through the challenges. You're gladdening the mind so you don't have to go through the challenges.
Yeah.
That when you're glad and happy and okay, then you don't have to challenge yourself. The only reason to challenge yourself is because you're unhappy and you want to prove that you are okay.
I see the slight difference. Yeah. Well, maybe it's my English. Sometimes my words are not the perfect one, but okay.
No,
I
don't think that it's got to do with your English. I think it's got to do with your attitude.
Yeah. I saw about my attitude, and I think this 6 days of challenge, my attitude was really challenged. Yeah. And being in Mumbai also, it's challenging because so many people, I don't know how people can live here.
They got used to it and they're not looking for a challenge.
Not
by dealing with people. But in fact, Indians have a different, let us say, because of the culture, they have a different understanding of personal space.
Like
Westerners, they have the idea of my personal space is about as far as I can reach. I don't want anybody that can come close enough to punch me. But in India, they don't have any personal space.
Well, actually,
so they don't expect you to have any personal space either.
Well, yesterday, I watched the last call that you had with the Sangha, and you talked about boundaries. And being in India, and I realized how much accurate it was to hear this from you, because my boundaries have been quite challenged, let's say like this, and I'm quite fine because I realized
you made those boundaries up. That's what I'm telling you, is that you learned from your culture how to make those boundaries, and in India they have a different way of looking at boundaries.
And I learned to be more flexible with those boundaries and realize how thin they were, you know. And I could see also when I would end up in, like, let's say, touristic areas with Western people, how they would create those boundaries, you know, and how they would be really, like, strict about I mean, you could feel that they brought with them their culture in India, and they would still have those same boundaries, whereas I would feel that I need to change my boundaries. I mean, I have to make them more flexible, because people would just gather next to me really close and I cannot do anything about it. I just need to be right with it. And I think being mindful throughout the day without being able to sit and being in Mumbai, it's quite a good practice, as you said, because I can clearly see what the boundary is about, you know, the flexibility and how I have to be like water, you know, around people and events and situations. Mm-hmm. And that has been most of the time what I've been experiencing through my journey, not even in India, but throughout all the countries and Asian cultures.
Right. The Asian culture is different from the French culture.
Yeah.
And so now that you've got only a week left, you can, in fact, begin to enjoy the loss of your boundaries while you're still in India, to recognize you've got no boundaries. The boundaries that you thought you had are not going to be respected by the Indian people, because they don't have your same understanding of boundaries.
That's actually quite nice. I don't know how to explain it as an experience, but it's just good, you know. I like this closeness that they have here, and they also, most of the time, people are really grounded for some reason compared to Westerners, and so this proximity that creates, I don't know, there's something that just is really fluid, you know. So I really enjoy this as a practitioner, because I guess when I will be back in the West, it will be another type of practice too, because of this type of boundary that we are used to.
Okay, well, that's a point of mindfulness then, to begin to be mindful, begin to look at boundaries. When you get back to France, you'll have different boundaries there too.
All right. So it's always curious how our calls begins, you know, because I always feel a little bit shy and awkward at first, and I feel like I'm stepping on a stage, you know, like this, the little stress from performing. I mean, not performing, but being on the stage and performing something. And the more we go through the call.
But be the star of your own show. Now, in fact, one of the things that we can say is that Shakespeare was right when he says all the world's a stage. And everyone is an actor upon their stage. But I can complete that by talking about the fact that every actor upon the world stage has a script that they're reading. The script that they're reading is the one that they made up when they were in childhood. And when you begin to recognize that who you are is something that you decided when you were a child, that you can stop reading that script and just pay attention to what's going on in stage, recognizing that everybody else there is an actor up on their stage and they don't even know it. And you don't have to be the actor. But in fact, what you could do instead is go sit in the audience and just see the reality on the stage. Become an observer. See reality as it is, rather than being an actor on the stage.
But don't you think that being developing mindfulness and seeing things as they are, you do the opposite. You obviously you are observing things, but you're becoming a real actor.
Right. Well, you're feeling like that you're an actor, which means that you create the reality of being an actor. And so you get shy when you're around other people. The fact is that everybody else there is an actor and they're acting out their part. And your part is acting out as shy, but you have a choice about that. You can stop thinking that all the world's a stage, and in fact, all the world is just real.
Okay. So when you start to be the reality, okay, this is when you
You've got a choice about that. You don't have to be anxious and uptight in front of reality. You're in front of reality all the time. Why do you choose certain times to be uptight and not others? You can be. You can choose to be not uptight and shy whenever you recognize that you're uptight and shy. Because you're not an actor until you think that you are. And who is the actor? That's the you. That's the personality. The one, the part of you that's artificial. That really doesn't exist.
Sunyata.
Exactly.
Well, actually, I've been experiencing this emptiness, let's say, like this, with the body, because of my weight loss. And also, I've been seeing my body changing. And 10 years ago, I was really skinny. I mean, not really skinny, but I was skinny, and I gained weight by practicing by working out. You know. So for me, it was something important to feel good with myself. And throughout the years, I grew up and I keep on working out for my health, but without really being as caring for how I look. And since I've been
cycling, I don't care how you look. Why should you care how you look?
Yeah. But it just, I've seen like how my body changed in a brief moment, you know, by being, you know,
it is, and it's how constantly changing.
Yeah. But you,
the diet and what you're eating and where you're around and all kinds of stuff, that you're constantly in flux, you're constantly in motion.
Is that okay?
But,
yeah, that's fine. But the thing is, I've seen the changes changed quite quickly, whereas most of the time you don't really see the change as much as, you know.
But isn't that an object of perception? When you're looking closely, things move along pretty swift. When you're not paying attention, everything looks like that it's slow. Start paying attention to the way your perception is working.
I think one of the things about the body and the teaching of the Buddha, you know, like looking at the body and understanding that you're not the body, that's something I've been, I think, trying to practice, but it's not easy, I believe. That's why this change that I've seen throughout losing weight, gaining weight so quickly throughout days kind of triggered my perception, you know, like, oh, okay, my body was bigger before, now it's slimmer, but it's not me. But still, it's really hard to make the to not see your body as your body, you know, like to like, this is still my body, but it's not my body.
Can you enjoy that process?
Yeah.
Just start enjoying the process. Everything is in flux. Everything is changing. And including your attitude and your perceptions are changing. So start watching that. Start being mindful of it. Start paying attention to the fact that everything is changing, and it's okay that it changes. That's just reality.
And it's just
well. All right. So I'll talk to you when you get back to France then.
Well, I will be in Turkey actually. I will be back in France in September. First I will be in Turkey and then I will slowly cycle back to France.
All right. Well, call me when you leave India.
All right.
Or call me before, I don't care.
Yeah.
We'll see you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.